Can I share?
This conference will.
Great, great. All right, so let's talk about the book, and that's actually the name of the book, Delivering Happiness, A Path to Profits, Passion, and Purpose. And Tony Tsai, he's an Asian, moved here, his family moved here, and lived out in on the West Coast. When I first started reading the book, in fact, through about at least half, I was thinking, well, this is just a story about some guy, you know, and it sounded almost motivated by self, you know, was a little tad of me in it, which is fine because it was a story about his life. But it was, to me, it kind of, you know, like I was like, okay, so I'm reading about this guy's life. But when it got into his business experiences after college, it was pretty awesome how he developed and from whence he came to what he became. And it's a book about transformation of a person's life. And so that was what was so exciting about it. And then how he applied everything he learned in the business world so that he could create greater, you know, happiness. And that's an effect what we're going to talk about throughout this talk today. He could create an incredible environment where people were exhilarated to come to and they were truly directed in a direction to be servants and servant leaders, and it reminded me a lot about, some of you might be familiar with servant leadership. I went to a servant leadership convention. It was like 2 days of conferences, and it was just terrific. It was absolutely awesome to meet some of the people there, understanding servant leadership. I've done trainings on it. And there are companies out there. There are many companies out there. It's not just Zappos by any means, but Southwest Airlines is one. And when you talk to employees from these companies, and invariably I meet them, of course, it's easy for us to meet Southwest employees here in Dallas because this is where their headquarters are. They all love their jobs. They live and breathe and die for their jobs. When 9/11 occurred, and all the planes were downed, no one could fly. There was a no-fly zone put in place. The Southwest employees here in Dallas all came into the company, and they worked 24/7 around the clock to find ways of contacting all their employees, their stewards, their stewardesses, their pilots, everybody that was out there, and to get them home. And it was just an incredible process that these people, because they treat everybody in their company as family. And it's just, you know, to read some of the stories about the dedication they have instead of treating a job as a job, which so many companies have gone in that direction for too many years, this is a whole new experience. So you know, from that perspective, you know, this isn't the only story like this, but it's a huge story. And all I can say is that if Manatech chooses to take this as a blueprint for how they transform Manatech over the next year or two, or this is something that will take them 5 years probably to get to the, you know, place where it really shines, I just give kudos to them because it's an incredible path to be on that's going to create incredible results for you, me, for everybody associated with the organization. But one of the important things is we have to recognize our role in that as well because we are part of the change and we're part of making that change happen. So, okay, so let's jump in and talk about the book. And I'll have some passages I'll actually read from the book as I go through, but basically, the first, as I said, the first part of the book is really about the history of Tony. And I gave you at the beginning, why did he write this book? First of all, why do you write a book like this? And he wrote the book to serve as an encouragement to establish businesses and entrepreneurs like you and me who want to defy conventional wisdom and create their own path to success. And it is. It's like he's forging ahead with new ways of creating success and looking at success and driving success in your life and in your business, and that's why he did it. He wanted to share this, and an incredible share. So let's look, and each of the numbered paragraphs are all chapters. So the book had a total of 7 chapters in it, so we have 7 spots. So let's just go through this one chapter at a time. First one was just In Search of Profits, and he talked a lot about his history, his past, you know, how he was born and raised, and how his family, being Asian, they were very pro-academics. His mother required him to learn lots of instruments. And Tony right away found himself not interested in a lot of things that everybody else was trying to make him do. In fact, he would tape music, and in the early mornings he would put on a tape downstairs of piano music playing, so his mother and father thought that he was practicing piano, and he'd be reading books or doing other things that he was more interested in. So he came, and then we'd go back in his room, close his bedroom door, and play violin music on a tape recorder. And so the only thing that was wrong was his teachers that he went to see once a week or once every couple of weeks to get upgraded. The teacher never understood why he made no progress with his piano or his violin playing. And it was because he really wasn't practicing. So he was determined from day one. He had his likes and dislikes, and he was going to pursue his passions. And he really was very entrepreneurial. He started many businesses at the age of six, his path, he said, led him to based on 10 core values that all began on a worm farm. And his first entrepreneurial venture was a worm farm. And he failed miserably at it. And that's why at the first In Search of Profits, it says, "I failed my way to success." That's really a quote from Thomas Edison. Well, Tony felt the same way. He failed at many, many things in his life, but it never deterred him from, the concept that it was critically important for him to take risks and think outside the box, because he wanted to create something new and different. He didn't want to be like his mom and dad. He wanted to be, create something new and different. And at the time, he didn't understand it, but he really was in pursuit of happiness is what he was doing. So in the second chapter, he took it a little bit further. He went through a lot of his different entrepreneurial endeavors. And like I said, he started at six, and the worm farm was number one. And he went through many, many other things. He had all sorts of things through middle school, and from food service things to putting together flyers and advertising materials to door-to-door sales. He did everything from A to Z, and some of them worked out fine, and other ones, but it was always constantly thinking about brainstorming of things to do differently. He went to Harvard as college because his parents forced him to go there. It wasn't really his choice. But he went to Harvard, and he was incredible how he connived around even showing up at classes. He did very well. But what was most important to his Harvard experience was really getting to know and developing an incredible core group of people that he really thought highly of, and were, really bright people that really dynamic. And he knew almost coming out of Harvard that he wanted some of these people to be in his life the rest of his life, many of them. But in fact, one of them, his roommate, is one of the guys that went to him, went, and they actually took jobs in the same place when they are in Harvard. Of course, they're trained to, go through the interview process and get the best job you possibly can. And many of us have been through that process ourselves. And they ended up taking jobs at Oracle, and that was their first job. They went back out to the California, and both were working at Oracle, and they were absolutely bored to death. So they would spend their nights together brainstorming on what could they do different. They wanted to do something different, be something different, create their own thing. So they started brainstorming about what they needed to do, what they could do, what could be different, and they came up with a concept called Link Exchange. And this was in the 90s when the internet was just starting to really explode, and this was an advertising technique where they would run banners on people's websites, and they'd receive credits for advertising for those banners. And they just, this idea of link exchange just really took off. And they started bringing more and more people on board with them. And they lasted at Oracle for about 5 months, and then they quit. And one of the hardest things Tony said he did was to go in and quit his job. And of course, his boss said, "Well, I knew you were so talented, some other startup company was going to get a hold of you." And it was funny because the startup company that got a hold of him was his own startup company, right? And they didn't have any money. They weren't making any money in the early stages, but they had enough saved up from odd jobs they had at college, so they thought they could make it. So they got involved in Link Exchange. They took this thing, and they started going crazy with it. And after 5 months of doing Link Exchange, some people came and contacted him and offered him $1 million. And it was cute, the story. The two partners looked at each other, and they said, let us think about it. They walked away, and they said, "Well, if he's willing to pay $1 million, maybe he'll pay $2 million, and then it might be worth our 5 months of work that we put into it, and we'll find something else we like to do." So they went back, and they said, "No, we want $2 million." And the guy said, we're not going to pay that." So they decided, that's okay. So they kept it. A little while later, a year later, so now they'd been in the business less than 2 years, Yahoo came in and offered them $20 million for the company, a company they had almost sold for $2 million just a year earlier. And they looked at each other, and they didn't even, without a doubt, they walked away, talked about it for half an hour and then got back and said, we're not interested. Because it was really funny how Tony said, I looked at what was I going to do with $20 million? What was I going to buy that was going to bring me happiness? And he couldn't think of anything that was going to bring him happiness. And he was having so much fun at the company, he just said, why do I want to give up what I really enjoy doing to have stuff and things? Because none of that really is what I'm thinking about I need. So he said, you know, the internet is the most explosive opportunity out there, so why don't we just continue growing this? Well, finally, about 1 year later, so now think about it, less than 3 years, he started up this company called Link Exchange, and less than 3 years later, Microsoft came in and bought him out for $265 million. So the company went from, as offered, $1 million to $20 million to $265 million in terms of value. And what he had seen, and the reason why he was ready to sell the year later, was the fact that this company was growing so fast and they were adding tons of employees. Well, when he first started the company, the only people he was hiring were all of his friends from Harvard and his friends from San Francisco. So he had kind of a cultural thing going on in the company. But because they were growing so fast, they were out there just loading up employees, employees after employees after employees. And he found himself not even wanting to go to work. And when he hit that level, that's when Microsoft came in almost like a white knight. And he said he was ready because he felt he had lost some of the corporate culture. And he was unable to maintain that with the fast growth. And of course, didn't have the experience of how to maintain it. But he saw what it did to him as a person, that he didn't feel comfortable and he didn't really enjoy coming to work every day because that culture had dissipated that he originally started 2.5 years earlier. And the experience of this whole thing was a big aha moment for him, too, that he was making that shift in his life. No longer, he wasn't chasing money. You know, when you first get out of college, a lot of times you chase money because you just want to, you're so tired of living like a los pobres that you want to, finally you have a degree and you want to go out there and make some money and start, you know, doing some things that you see the society doing. Not that you need them, but you have a desire and want to do them because, and I remember my experience too. The last thing, somebody was talking about getting out of college and going into, you know, the Peace Corps, going into charitable work and all this kind of stuff. And I remember after, you know, 8 years of post-high school education, 4 undergrad, 3 law school to get my JD and then a master's in tax, I was just going, hey, where's the money? I'm tired of living hand-to-mouth. I was just worn out from 8 years of that. So it was hard for me to have that perception. Not that it's not a beautiful thing, but I related to Tony. I felt the same way. I was, you know, chasing money. And so after this last experience, when Microsoft bought him out, he goes, it was a great aha moment for him that he's no longer chasing money. It was now a time to chase his passion. So when they all sold out to Microsoft, a bunch of them formed of the Link Exchange. They kind of got together and they said, okay, what are we going to do? They really loved working together. This was his initial culture that he had developed there, a lot of these people being his Harvard contacts and other people that he'd gotten to know. And so they all grouped together and set up a venture capital group, and they called it Venture Frog, which I thought was really great. I mean, they're just really unconventional guys, and they think outside the box. And they all put in millions of dollars. Of course, they all had made so much money out of the buyout because he had basically shared ownership with a lot of the key employees when he set up Link Exchange. So they all were multimillionaires, and they built this new venture capital group. And within the first year of the venture capital group, and they bought a lot of lofts, and they bought this building, and they had a, you know, like a party loft, and they had all these living lofts, and they had, you know, some all sorts of things going on in there where they were living out in San Francisco. Of course, you know, very expensive because this is in the late 90s. Late 90s. And so up high real estate prices, not as bad as they got by 2005, but still nonetheless high real estate prices in California. So they were living kind of almost communally. I mean, they were all had their own lofts, but they all kind of saw each other every day, and they even set up the venture capital firm they isolated one of the lofts just for the business. And he was, they invested all their money in the first 12 months, and one of the startups was called Zappos, the shoe company. And it was a shoe internet drop shop business. In other words, they didn't carry any inventory. 100% of their sales were just relayed onto the shoe manufacturer who then was in charge of the customer service and delivery of it. So that's how they operated. So they were, so that's that post, and it was a new upstart type thing, and he liked the idea because he saw what the market was. And one of his lessons that he learned, as he had this free time when he was running the venture capital firm, he had a ton of free time, he started playing poker. And so whatever your feelings are about poker, put them aside, because what he did is he studied poker, and he became excellent at it, but he also saw the downside to it. But one of the lessons he learned during this little jaunt in his life with poker was that the most important decision he ever made was what table to sit at. And it was just, what was he played? Some card, seven card, or Texas Hold'em or something like that. Because he realized that made all the difference in terms of whether you'd be successful or not. Because if you surrounded yourself with really intense people who 100% understood the card game, you weren't going to make as much because you were making money off of other people sitting at the table. So he would be in pursuit of the right table to sit at. That made all the difference in the world in his results in poker. Well, he felt that that was exactly identical to the business world, because you have to evaluate what business you're going to go into. You have to look at what business are you stepping into. And so true is that for all of us. I mean, I look back at my history, because remember, before I got involved in Manatech, I was heavily entrenched in business and law. And I own my own businesses, and one of the businesses that I owned with a couple of partners we bought into was a sweater manufacturer. And it was incredible. We bought this company in 1991, I think, yeah, because it was the reason I moved to Dallas. And now, who would buy a sweater manufacturer in 1991? Not very many people would do that. And what's the reason for that? The reason is because you had a lot of these free trade agreements coming along, and you also had the concept that all these clothing if you looked at the history of clothing manufacturer jobs, all the jobs were going overseas because labor is such an intense part of the cost of clothes. So we were already seeing a flood of jobs leaving the country out of the clothing industry from a manufacturing perspective, not from design but manufacturing. So a lot of this was already dissipated and going overseas, and it was a constant flow of jobs. So you're seeing a trend here. And so, again, the most important decision you make is what business you're going into. You don't go out and try to find an industry, you know, some company that's, you know, greatly discounted and good value based on what its price might have been 5 years ago. You've got to look at what business are you in. What is it, and analyze the business. And we didn't do that in the sweater company when we got invested in that. So what happened to me and my sweater company was just the idea that after 2 years they passed NAFTA, and although I took the company at the time we got the company, it was doing about $2.5 million in sales, and we drove it all the way up to about $9 million in sales in a couple of years. So I did great marketing. I was great at the marketing end of it, but the problem was that we were just getting squeezed to death after NAFTA passed in terms of competitive pricing, especially with Mexico. I could make the same sweater in Mexico for about half the price, because the labor prices down there were like 67 cents an hour versus my $5 an hour that I was paying, and that was back in the early 90s. So yeah, you have this huge disparity that occurred, and of course it was the wrong business to be in, and we eventually closed down the business here, had moved our business to Mexico, and eventually sold that off. So it was... there's no question. I really was in alignment with him in understanding the concept of business. When I look at Manatech today, I think, oh my gosh, we're in the right place at the right time. I mean, we have such a huge emphasis on health today. I see more and more people receptive. It's just amazing to me how integrative health has taken a huge position, and it's growing at an incredible clip in this country today, unlike what I saw 10 years ago. I mean, a far cry from what I had 10 years ago, and even greater than if you look 20 years ago. So we see a big movement there. So it's really about distinguishing ourselves. But the business is right for us in Manatech and nutritional supplements. Clearly the business is right. So that was a big lesson for him. And so he started looking. That was one of the decisions behind the Zappos, because he looked at the shoe business and he saw the volume of shoes being sold. The billions of shares, and the market was huge, and he said, well, clearly there's a demand for this type of business. Another lesson he learned that year was the birthday party. He had a huge birthday party at a new nightclub, and it changed his perspective forever. For some reason, when he walked into that birthday party, he just felt a transformation within himself. He, for the first time in his life, looked around and experienced a couple things. Number one, the experience of the music. He saw how music, the critical importance of music in building synchronicity among people, and when people do things in a synchronistic type environment, there's a great happiness that results. And he saw that, and he saw the need to have synchronicity in his business, in his culture, in his companies. He understood that, and he got the joy, and he saw the joy that it generates, and that teamwork and that uniformity. And so he really caught on to that. The other thing that really transformed him was the fact that he saw each individual as a unique person and having something to offer. He came with a feeling of no judgment. He just emasculated all judgment out of himself and just had this overwhelming sense of each human being had something to offer. And both of those experiences, of course, drove him the rest of his life, but they were huge, and it came from nothing more than just a nightclub experience. Isn't that amazing to me how these things come to us, but in moments that those things happen? You know, some of us have to go through trainings to get that. It's not just something that momentarily happens as we walk into things, but I would call that, you know, might be a quantum leap, if you want to go back to quantum thinking for him, that he went through in that environment. He also, this is a quote that comes out of the book, envision, create, and believe in your own universe, and the universe will form around you. And these are concepts that we have heard of over and over and over again. To think is to create, coming from Clemmer, you know, the magic of believing. And, of course, believing is the big critical. That's what I say. I just circle that one. But we want to be creative in our thought process, and that was so huge for Tony. It's always outside, think outside the box, but you must believe in it. When he ran out of the investment fund money, and then he had to decide what he was next going to do, well, he started looking over at Zappos, and he thought, you know what, this company could be my new universe. This could be my... So he chose to join forces and step back into a CEO role instead of the... Because the venture capital money was out. They had all were fully invested, and he couldn't find more funds because this was getting close to the 1990s, 2000. People were running out of money. They were getting more, you know, tentative. There was a huge dot-com crisis. You know, the dot-com crisis was huge. So he really... You know, he made a move that said, I'm going to put myself back into the corporate world and work at Zappos. All right, then we go to the next chapter of the book, which is Concentrate Your Position. So this talks about it. Now Tony's running Zappos. He's the CEO over at Zappos, or co-CEO. He had to go through a lot of changes there. I mean, because with the dot-com crisis, everything was crashing. So they had to condense their offices. They had to lay off lots of people. And he took a lot of employees and housed them in his lofts for a while, and he started seeing a new attitude forming. It was almost like when they were living together more in a communal environment, that all for one, one for all type attitude started coming back. And he liked that because that was the culture he was looking for. And he that lesson was the power of instilling passion throughout the company and working as a unified team. Everybody was making sacrifices. It was going through the tough times, everybody making sacrifices. And all of this kind of relates to me in terms of what Manitech's going through internally right now. I think they have a huge opportunity because of the pain of consolidating and repositioning themselves. This is a time when they can truly take on a new vision. I mean, they have the vision of, you know, stomping out. We have our goal of stomping out world malnutrition, childhood malnutrition. But internally, what is this company going to become? And that's a huge part of what they are grappling with today, and they get a great opportunity now with their repositioning and their thinning out their forces to see what is going to be our new culture here at Manitech, because that's really huge, and I can see where there have been issues in the past, and I'm ecstatic about their new approach, and I'm very prayerful that they really look at establishing that culture. And that's what he started seeing that at Zappos too. They were just, you know, basically on rope's end. He had to liquidate everything himself. He decided to put a lot. So he liquidated a lot of his assets and a lot of the money that he had left over from his Link Exchange. All got poured into Zappos, and survival became their number one motive. I mean, it was like, we're here to survive. Everybody's making sacrifices. We're here to survive. So he finally, they were down to like 2 months worth of cash left. They couldn't get any venture capital money, and he got together his best guy and just sat down and went out for drinks, and they brainstormed. They just said, cutting costs isn't going to be enough. We're seeing that even cutting all our costs, we're not breaking even. So we have to figure out how to increase our marketplace. And the guy in charge of the shoe area and all that stuff, he said, well, one of our problems is, he says, why don't we have the inventory everybody else has, the regular shoe store has? And he said, because they're investing in inventory. They can buy up the inventory, and then they have it. But we have to wait to see what the company has left over. That was basically, they were at the whim of the shoe manufacturers, what they had left over, because if people were buying all the stores were buying out all the hot items, then they were going to sell those directly to stores because they were buying the huge chunks of inventory, and Zappos was getting the leftovers. So right away they decided, we've got to change our business model. So look at the willingness to take on that change. That's a huge, and they had no money, and they were going to have to come up with $2 million just to start locking down inventory. And they were going to have to manage inventory and get a shipping department and everything else. But they saw that that was the only way to survive. That was the only way they were going to really increase their market share. So they had to find new warehousing, and then they started getting involved in customer service with all the new warehousing, and they were having more interactions with their customers rather than just a drop ship business. Now they were huge customer service. So the Zappos brand, he chose that was about best customer service and customer experience. They even built a library at Zappos for the employees, all around customer service, customer best business practices. So they wanted their employees to learn and grow and keep continuing to develop. So that was part of his early thing, changes they built at the company to make sure that everybody was growing and understanding best business practices, best customer relationships, how to build the best partnerships with vendors, all those things. He wanted all his employees to understand that. So they made the shift, and they were like 2 months into it, and they're about to go. I mean, they were so close to going out of business. It's an exhilarating story because it's like pins and needles. You're waiting to hear the flash shoe drop. And Wells Fargo came through after a month and a half of review with a $6 million line of credit. Well, that was the saving. That really saved Zappos, so they would have been out of business. And just to show you what their sales, okay, this happened in 2003. And in 2000, they had 1.6 million sales. In 2002, 8.6 million. 2000, 1.6. 2001, 8.6. 2002, 32 million. And 2003, after Wells Fargo came through, they did 70 million in sales. So look at their growth. See, they more than doubled their sales just by transferring out of dropship into doing direct inventory, so they could become service oriented. And there are a lot of great stories, I won't go into them, that are written in the book about, you know, trucks being lost and all sorts of trials and tribulations. And the great parts of those parts of the book really tell you that even in the darkest times, there was always light. Tony always looked at, he was always a thinker outside the box. He always saw the positive sides. He always saw, and he came across that way with all his employees. And there was no question that he had fear from time to time because he didn't even know where the money was coming. He went in and he had to sell, when they decided to go into this inventory shoes, he had to sell everything he had. I mean, he sold everything he had left, and he had to sell it. The real estate market was crashing at the time, too. It wasn't really good, but it was soft. He had to sell at deep discounts because he needed the cash so badly to support the company. So as I said in the outline, he put everything in. He was all in this. So Wells Fargo coming through was gigantic for him. And then their next platform for growth, brand, culture, and pipeline. This is huge. Now, this is where, if you're going to spend time with this book, this is where you want to spend. The past is the past, but this is where you want to spend all your energy in this book, because this is where it talks about cultural changes, how to build a company, what to establish in a company, the building the happiness of the employees, the greatness of what's going on in our world today, the internet, the fast pace, and how to keep on top of all the things that can be done by internet. It was fascinating to me how he built this company, and he based on what he called BCP, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But one of the first things they recognized, that with this huge customer service, they were having a hard time finding people in customer service. Just like Manitech, you know, it seems like every single time you call customer service, somebody new and they don't know what they're talking about. And we have a lot of frustration with that. I think Wayne Badavinas, when he came on board with Manatech, he did a great job because he understood customer service is where it starts and where it ends. And he put a phenomenal emphasis on customer service. Well, somehow that's dissipated again. We need to get back there. We need to get back to the incredible customer experience. That's what we need to provide our customers. So we really need to develop and put that back in place. That's a real key need for Manatech. But Tony saw that as well back in 2003. He was looking, he couldn't get enough employees that were that positive, that were energetic. Everybody in San Francisco seemed to look at customer service jobs as part-time jobs that were just going to be there for a short period of time. He wanted people to fall in love with their jobs. He wanted people to absolutely adore their jobs, absolutely thrive on customer service. He wanted to find the best possible people, and he couldn't do that in San Francisco. So he said, We've got to, you know, maybe we outsource and put our customer service department over in Las Vegas or so. And then he decided that's preposterous since all we are is customer service. Our entire business is nothing more than customer service. And if that's his entire business, he goes, how can I separate them out from our corporate headquarters? We all have to be in the same place because that's who we are. So he ended up moving the entire company, which is about 90 employees, to Las Vegas. He gave everybody the opportunity if they wanted to come or not come because, again, it was part of that's the happiness that we're providing. We want people to be a part of the team if they want to be part of the team. So, and the majority of the people moved with him to Las Vegas. And after the move, he went out and he said, what is the culture of our business, of our company? And he had every single employee draft, you know, a few paragraphs on what they saw as the culture of Zappos. And he took that, and with just minor editing, he built what was called the Zappos Culture Book, and it became mandatory reading for every new employee that came into the company. Isn't that cool? So he really captured what is the culture of who we are. And then for the next 5 years, until from 2003, 2004 until almost 2010, They focused exclusively on three things. They focused on, number one, improving their customer experience, number two, strengthening their culture, and number three, investing in their employees' personal and professional development. All right, so he called this, that's the BCP. And incredibly, when they did that, their goal was to hit $1 billion in sales by 2010. They hit $1 billion in 2008, 2 years earlier than projected. How to increase the brand. Well, this is what they did, and I'm just giving you some of the ideas, and I'm going to read some things from the book as well. But for increasing the brand, that was about improving customer experience, right? Because that's all they were, was customer. It was all about customers. How do we feed our customers? How do we treat our customers the best possible way? So increasing the brand, they set up a gigantic call center. They had incredible people and trainings that went on to develop these people. They put their telephone number all over their websites. On every page of their website, you could have their telephone number. Now, this was totally contrary to what everybody else was doing in the industry because everybody else was trying to get out of call centers since they were such a huge cost to the company. Well, what Tony saw is he said, all we are is customer service, so we want people to be able to dial up a number and get on a phone with somebody anytime, 24/7, whatever they need. So he developed this phenomenal call center and did massive training for every single person in that call center. He invested tons in that call center. What is Manatech other than customer service? We are customer service. That's what we are. It's what corporate is customer service. Yes, we have research and development, but we're customer service. We're driven exclusively by customers, so it's critical for us to see that same need here. They had free shipping both out and back, okay? So you could buy five pairs of shoes, get free shipping to your place, try five of them on, decide which ones you like, pack up the other ones, and have free shipping to return them. So people got to shop by their and yes, is that a cost to the company? Of course it's a cost to the company, but you know what? It built phenomenal brand loyalty, phenomenal connectiveness. People buy shoes from Zappos and they won't buy shoes anywhere else because of that relationship. They also have a 365-day return policy, 100% money-back guarantee policy, just like Manatech has. So they incorporated that, but theirs is a year, 365 days. So incredible what they built into it. So they took a very different approach than what was happening in corporate America, and that approach is part of what built their business phenomenally because of the customer loyalty that they built along with it. one of the cute things, I'll just give you one of the cute stories that happened. They had one of their customers called up at like 2 o'clock in the morning. Of course, remember, they have 24/7. And they were from someplace in California. Of course, these guys are in Las Vegas. And they're going, hey, man, you know, I'm calling from this. I buy shoes from you guys. But I was calling my pizza joint, and they're closed. And we desperately want a pepperoni pizza. Is there any way you can help us? Yeah. And that customer service rep said, hold on, and went out, did a search, found three places, got back on the phone, said, here's three places within 10 miles of where you are where they're still open and deliver pizzas. And he gave them the three. Isn't that incredible? It had nothing to do with shoes, but it was just exemplifies what Tony was trying to drive, that your customer is critically important. You're here to serve them whatever way you can. Now, he didn't even want to write that and put it in the book because he was so afraid that, you know, everybody would be calling Zappos customer service to get their local pizza parlor, which ones were open. But he felt it was so much of a part of who they were that he still put it in the book. So that was a branding. Wouldn't that be phenomenal? Think about the Manitech brand having that kind of customer service. That's the goal. That should be our goal, just to make every customer have an awesome experience when they call into our customer service department. How do you strengthen culture? That was so let's go to the second step. So first of all, we talked about the brand, who we are, our identity, which is all customer service, right? That's who we are. Then he talked about the culture. How do you strengthen culture? And he said that really your brand is just a lagging indicator of the company's culture. So if you have a weak culture internally, you're going to have a weak brand. Because the brand is just a lagging indicator of where your culture is. And one of the things he pointed out, he says, we live in a very different world today. With the Internet connecting everyone together, companies are becoming more and more transparent, whether they like it or not. This is huge, people. This is very important. An unhappy customer or a disgruntled employee can blog about a bad experience with a company, and the story can spread like wildfire by email or with tools like Twitter. The good news is that the reverse is also true. A great experience with a company can be read by millions of people almost instantaneously as well. So think about that. If you had an awesome experience with customer service rep and you tweeted that or you put it out there on a blog or something, millions of people could be impacted just like that. So that's what we have to recognize. It's about, you know, making sure that, number one, you don't have disgruntled employees. And how do you do that? By creating an incredible internal culture that you make sure people feel comfortable that they're a part of it, that they can become a part of. One of the things I have later in the outline is the fact that what Tony did in his training sessions, he'd bring in new employees and you get trained. After 2 weeks of full training, of course, you're getting paid as well because you're being trained as a new employee. He would go to every employee and he'd say, I'm paying you $2,000 to quit. And it wasn't about that he wanted them to quit. It was just like, if you don't feel that this is your place, if this is the place for you after everything you've learned in the first 2 weeks, we'll give you a $2,000 check and you can leave. And he said very few people have left based on that. But he just wanted to make sure people weren't coming to the job just for money. He wanted people to have greater purpose and greater sense of becoming part of the culture at Zappos. That was his idea. So he built that even into his training. So that's part of his culture. And he believes, here's a part of a quote out of the book, at Zappos, our belief is that if you get the culture right, most of the other stuff, like great customer service, building a great long-term brand, or passionate employees and customers, will happen naturally on its own. We believe that your company's culture and your company's brand are really just sides of the same coin. Your brand may lag the culture at first, but eventually they'll catch up. So incredibly different environment. I mean, just really committed to creating a culture, making sure everybody's on board, offering people exits if they are not on board. And this kind of culture, you should see some of the things in the book were really, really wild, the different parties they had, the different stuff that was going on. I mean, they really thought outside the box. They really were allowed. They really valued the creativity of their employees. They allowed a lot of freedom, but they also had a lot of, you know, checks and balances. So there were controls in place, but it was an incredible environment where people really felt like they could be outside the box. the next page in the outline, I go into the 10 core values that were developed at the company. And those are critically important as well. Deliver wow through service. And wow is what wow is. That's what they're known for. They're a wow company. They believe in that when a customer calls in, they have excessive overperformance with each customer. Their belief is to go above and beyond the call of duty, and whatever it takes, that's what they do. And so it's this constant, you know, they underpromise and overperform. That's the whole thing. Underpromise, overperform. Like, and Apple is very much the same way. They have the same commitment there. And there are other companies. Southwest Airlines is very much the same way. That's why Southwest doesn't charge for bags. They don't charge change fees if you want to change flights. They don't put all those ticky-tacky stuff that American and all the other airlines are doing. Southwest says, hey, we're here to serve you as a customer, and we have an understanding and empathy that, you know, things change out there. You're going to have to change your flight from time to time. So they're very different philosophy, and it's very pro-customer because they know one thing. They're only as good as their reputation with their customers. So create wow service through customers. Embrace and drive change. That's a critical factor for Tony and his company. He wants people to constantly be in the change. He says, we must all learn not only to not fear change, but to embrace it enthusiastically and perhaps even more important, encourage and drive it. We must always plan for and be prepared for constant change. And although change can come from many directions, it's important that most of the changes in the company are driven from the bottom up, from the people who are on the front lines, closer to the customers and or the issues. So he gives incredible value to the people on the front line and what they have to say and making changes in the company. Three was create fun and a little weirdness, and that whole concept was just about not being boring. He didn't want a day to go by that was boring. He wants a unique experience. He wants people to be encouraged to think outside the box. Be adventurous, creative, and open-minded, same thing. He wants people to be bold and daring that work for him in his environment, that they are willing to take risks. Number five, pursue growth and learning. This company is totally driven for personal development and professional development for each and every person in the company. And you'll see that even more so when you get to pipeline. Build open and honest relationship with the communication because it leads to trust and faith, and that's he's totally convicted on that. Build a positive team from family spirit. He wants everybody to care about everybody else in the company and encourage teamwork at every single stop of the way. Everything. Always teamwork. Always care about other people. Build people up. Unlike most corporate atmospheres where it's climbing a corporate ladder, stepping on people, here it's always about positive team, family spirit, build up. Do more with less. Operational excellence, he believed in. Always room for improvement. Never settle for good enough. Never settle for good enough. Be passionate and determined. That's huge. He believes in passion. We want to build as much passion in our people as possible. We want them to be passionate to come here and inspired. Passion is a fuel that drives ourselves and our company forward. We value passion, determination, perseverance, and the sense of urgency. We are inspired because we believe in what we are doing and where we are going. We don't take no or that'll never work for an answer because if we had, Zappos would never have started in the first place. This is just his language. Passion and determination are contagious. We believe in having a positive and optimistic attitude about everything we do because we realize that this inspires others to have the same attitude. So it's not just about what's happening internally in the company. He wants to inspire this in his customer base as well. Look at that. He sees his outreach being more important almost than what's happening internally. He needs that internal, but the internal is that ball of fire, that ball of determination and passion and positive to be able to influence this, you know, worldwide. And be humble. He says there's no room for arrogance anywhere in this business. So, and it matches Zappos' mission statement, to live and deliver wow. To live wow and deliver wow. That's his thing. Isn't that great? To wow, you must differentiate yourself, which means you do something unconventional and innovative. And that's what they promote. And that's all about the pizza story I told you about, you know, thinking to do it. How to build pipeline? Well, one of the issues, this is the third concept here. So we had the brand, the culture, and the pipeline. Pipeline was a concept that, you know, when people lose employees, if employees are your most important asset, then when you lose an employee, what have you lost? A major asset. Well, Tony says, we don't think that way. obviously we value our employees immensely, but we value them from a perspective of creating pipelines. So in every single department, what they do is they train people to take a higher position. So you're constantly being trained to move into a higher position. So if anyone leaves, it's really a fulfillment of a new position for people who have been waiting to be in that position. So he drives his people to be as strong as possible, to be as driven as possible, to be as educated as possible and trained so they can climb that quote-unquote corporate ladder. So it's really a big part of his culture because he wants everybody to feel like their job is their calling in life, and they want to improve at it and be the best they can be at it. Instead of carrying fear, be the best they can be at everything they do there. Taking it to the next level, after they had this huge, phenomenal growth, when Microsoft bought out Zappos, do we get to that one? Or no, Amazon. Amazon bought. I don't think I wrote that up in the outline. Yikes. Yeah, I never even wrote up because, okay, so sorry, guys. Well, it comes later. It comes at the bottom of the next one. Take it to the next level. Well, what Tony was finding, that he had created all this and culture inside, and they had this incredible culture, and they had all this library and books and training and personal development, professional development, and he had the culture book. They had parties, frequent parties, conferences, seminars, all sorts of things. Every time the company had a gigantic success, he shared it with everybody in the company. He would have emails that he'd send around to all the employees, not real frequently, but enough to, they knew it really made a difference, that he cared about them and he was touching their lives. And he had done this throughout his entire career, short career as it was. But the problem that happened is because Zappos was getting this name and reputation, they started getting Tony to go out and do speeches all across the country at different business conventions and conferences and whatever. And when he gave these speeches, they would ask him all sorts of questions, and at first he was really nervous because he really wasn't built to make speeches. But he finally found that if he just didn't prepare, if he just went to tell stories and came from his heart and his passion, that's what really worked. And he found that by giving all these conferences and speeches, that he was able to impact other people's lives. And he became with a new direction that through our culture at Zappos, we want to help change the world. We want to help other companies change the way they did things as well, so they could see the benefits of developing an incredible, intense culture that was so teamwork-oriented and positive-oriented and all about, making sure people were working in synchronicity with each other. And so he found that he was driven more by that than the profits of the company. And, of course, the board members started getting fussy and some of his original investors, and he was having some conflicts. So right away he said, I've got to buy them out because this is more important to me. The pursuit of happiness and the pursuit of a better corporate culture in all of America was more important to him than whether Zappos got to $200 billion or not. He didn't. That was just, again, chasing money. He was after a greater purpose. He had gone through chasing money. He had gone through his passion, and now he was finding his ultimate passion in the purpose that he had chosen. So all of a sudden, a white knight came up. Amazon came in and offered to buy the company, a stock-for-stock transaction that made them all, hundreds of millions of dollars. And he looked at that, and he went back and forth with the Amazon people and worked with the CEO, and they were going to allow him to maintain that culture and do what he wanted to do. And so he said, this is the perfect match. So they did a stock-for-stock transaction. So all the shareholders of Zappos and the employees all became shareholders of Amazon. They all became exceedingly wealthy. But the beautiful thing that happened is he was allowed to have the freedom. His board could go away. The people that didn't fit, that all they wanted to do was make tons of money, and they were just driven purely by money. So, but his culture in his company of his employees was still stayed intact because he had gotten that culture quite developed there. So it was an incredible process. At the end, this chapter 7 was the end game. So far this book was about Tony, now it's about you. And he started asking questions like, what is your goal in your life? And if you just sit back and spend some time to say, what is that goal in your life, and you write it down, and then you start asking your question, why? And you keep asking the question, why, and why, over and over again, to get deep enough inside of you. And you're going to find that deep down, almost always the core value there is a sense of happiness. A sense of satisfaction, a sense of contentedness that we're all striving for. It's the core value we all have in terms of what we strive for. If you look at it you know, just keep digging and digging. Happiness is going to be at that core. So Tony started doing all this analysis of happiness and the whole science of happiness and he wrote about the really four things: perceived control, perceived progress, connectedness, and vision and meaning. Those are the four things that really happiness is about. And in his last chapter, he talks about Maslow's hierarchy and the three types of happiness. And he drives that through us all, that we start off like in seek of pleasure. We tend to be pleasure seekers, and that's early on as we're immature stage. And then we get into passion, flow and engagement, time flies. We start, you know, pursuing our passion, and then finally we become part of a higher purpose, being a part of something bigger than yourself, kind of like what we are at Manatech when we choose global malnutrition. And so he talked about all those levels and how to achieve them, and it's just a great, the last chapter is just a great chapter in terms of the pursuit of happiness and the consistency between the parallels between a great business and having great happiness. They're identical. He says that you really can tie these parallels identical with you know, the happiness. In business, you're in personal life, there's the pleasure that you seek, and in business, it's profits. But you develop soon pursuing passion and then finally pursuing great purpose. And all of those are about how we achieve the happiness in our life and the science of happiness, which has really become a science. He actually studied all that stuff, and like I said, his chapter 7 was awesome. So that's our book for today, people. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Do I have any feedback from the crowd? I love the fact that so much of this can be so directly applied to Manatech, and I'm prayerful that they take on a wow leader internally to really drive this, because we are a customer service business, and that's what we're at. We're here to serve. And if we can build that servant leadership, that wow factor in Manatech, I think that you're going to see a different company come out of this as well. We have the purpose. We just need now to come back and build up that core from internal, and make sure we have the right people and the right on the bus and moving forward in the right direction. Right? Anyone have any comments? Great.
Mary, I have a question.
Sure.
Really think Mary Jo, Manatech will embrace this, because they really need some help with their stock. The stock is really in not sad shape. Do you have any comments about that?
I think the stock is a pure reflection of you know, how the company is doing economically. I mean, financially, they're not doing well right now. They've had a couple quarters of losses, and they need to plug that hole. That's part of their repositioning they're doing. But I don't think they're going to achieve a greater level until customer service, and they really hold.
Hello? Hello? You're gone. Can't hear you. You're gone. Oh my. Weird. Mary Jo, we can't hear you. Can't hear you. Hello? Can anybody else hear Mary Jo?
No.
Hi. Can you hear her? No. Well, thank you for answering the question. I just wished I could hear the rest of the answer, but thank you, and have a good week. And happy 4th of July.
Is anybody else still there? Hello? Everybody hang up?
Hello?
Hello?
No, I'm still on. I just don't know if she's coming back or not.
Yeah, I know. I mean, she never leaves that abruptly, so I don't think that it's on a time. I mean, I don't think that the call is restricted to a exact hour, is it? Because we've gone over before.
Yeah, maybe her phone died or something.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. She just kind of dropped off in midair.
I was trying to text Lydia, but I can't get through out of my phone here.
I mean, when I got on, I was one of the last because I didn't get on until a little after 5 after, and there were like 50-some-odd people on the call at that time, so...
Hello?
Am I back?
Sorry, you guys. We got just totally wiped out. My phone went dead for some reason. I was just talking and... anyway, for those of you back on the call, I was just... Let me just finish that comment. I was just amidst of saying... the importance of our stock. The stock's going to follow the economic, you know, viability of the company, and the company's had some tough times. They've made some huge changes internally to help get them back in a profitable stance, but we still need to grow. I mean, and that's going to be, to me, this business is all about customers. We got to go out and find new customers, and we've got to keep the ones that we have and treat them with just absolute wow, you know, and that's part of the new pack, the new auto order, I think is a huge wow, but it's not a, you know, wow, the wowness of what Tony talks about in his book is never-ending wow. It's about every day, every moment wow. So, and that doesn't mean you have to come out with a new pack like they did, but it means that we need to give people more than what they ever expect. You know, always overperform. And how are we dealing, how are we honoring our customers that we have? How are we dealing with them? And so much of that has to do with what we do out in the field as well. And, you know, phone calls and follow-up and emails and making sure people are doing fine when they get started on the products and how much attention are we giving people to really drive this. A lot of times network marketing companies get, you know, they have so much problem with retention. I think a big thing is because they fail to train customer service. I think Manatech as a company, I don't know that they ever put a great amount of training for us in customer service. But I think it's critically important that you understand that you and I we're all into customer service in a gigantic way. That's our whole job is customer service, really. We're serving people. I mean, we go out and we recruit, but we, you know, prospect, but we spend, you know, probably a good percentage of our time is customer service, making sure we keep what we get because that's just critical. So I think the company, I think the stock is going to respond as the company responds, and I think the only way the company is going to respond and do great and the stock, and thus the stock climb back up is if all of us step up to a higher level. We start to co-recruiting and we make a real dedication into wowing our customers, and then we'll see a difference in this company. Yeah. You got the products, and you got the vision, and you got the purpose, and we got tremendous people at the headquarters. It just... getting out there and making a difference in people's lives. So we can all do that, can't we?
Yes.
Okay. So let's go do it. Amen to that. I'm a believer. I couldn't be happier. I like this whole, you know, transformation process I see internally with Manatech because I think it really gives them an opportunity to develop that kind of internal core culture again and get us back on track. But yeah, we need the field to get back on track as well, and that's going to take, I don't know. It's something that the you know, Platinums and some of the people on council maybe ought to start thinking about how do we get that. And most of it happens at conventions like showing up at ManaQuest and ManaFest. That's why I'm hoping they have a Zappos training. I think it'd be awesome to have a Zappos training at ManaQuest. So keep your eyes open for that. Let me see if Mary Jo can... And they might already have it planned. I don't know, but I had such a blast reading this book and feeling so pumped about what Tony did. I see no reason why we can't do the same thing at Manatech.
Mary Jo,
huh? Joellen here.
Yes, Joellen.
Hey, thank you so much for this. I missed the first part, so I don't want to be redundant. Have you shared this book with people at corporate?
They already had. In fact, that's how I got it. It came through one of my presidentials in my downline who heard about it from Kevin Robbins, that the company already has the book. So that's how that's how I got the book in the first place. It's clear to me that they have it. I don't know what they're actually doing with it, but I'm going to find out after what I've just done over the weekend and today's call. That's my next step, is to get a hold of Sam and those people and say, what is going on? What are we doing, and why don't we have this incredible, entrenchment of this book? I mean, we talked about Quantum Think, and that was a great book, and I enjoyed all that, but this is a book that will help change our culture. That quantum thinking is taking it to a whole other level about how we view it. It allows us to be more open and allows us to achieve greater things. But without this acknowledgement, and there's a lot of tie-ins between quantum think and, in fact, I was even talking about a lot of things Tony went through in the book as quantum leaps that he achieved. Absolutely. At different stages of his life. Yeah, yeah. It's cool. Yeah.
And Mary Jo, back when we first came, we had master associate training. And
oh,
in that, it talked to us about how to invite people and how to follow up with people and how to keep people really in the loop, in the Manitech culture. And they stopped doing that training.
I know. Huge. I agree with you. I think it was gigantic. And it was, it's not about being a cult. Because culture isn't, cult comes from culture, cult. But it is about being having a oneness of a spirit that we really believe that customer service is most important. We really believe in our customers. We love them. We honor them. We enjoy them. We serve them. And if we aren't getting back into teaching that as part of our culture, I don't know where we're going. Then we're just like hit and miss. And I think it fits so incredibly well with our goal of stomping out global malnutrition in children, because it comes from that same heart, right? It's the same heart.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This is Marley.
Hi, Marla.
Yeah, I just have to tell you that when I first started using Zappos personally a few years ago, and used them again this summer, and ordered a pair of shoes. It was overnight delivery, but what I really liked about it was the customer service. And, you order online, and it was like, so within the afternoon, I had these emails coming from them that were just hilarious. I mean, their sense of humor is over the top. And I was like, whoa, Nellie, we're shipping free. So, I mean, it's just so, makes you want to participate with a company like that. And that's where I think Manitech is going. And when we started free shipping, it was so exciting to know that this company is moving forward in this direction.
Great. Yeah, Marla, it's great. And great. Thanks for that insight. That's super. Because that's what, it is about that. It's about, we can send boring emails out that say, hey, welcome to Manitech. You've just become a new associate, da-da-da-da-da. I mean,
exactly.
When are you going to wake me up, right? That's not what Zappos is about. Zappos is all about wow. It's about how do I, and that's exactly what your experience around it. Anyone else buyers of Zappos on the phone? I have you all off of mute, so yeah, it's just incredible. I mean, I think that's what you develop that, and it doesn't, it doesn't have to be way out there. It just needs to be just another level, another. We got to quit being so. I don't know. We got to get into the realm of we honor you guys. We love you as a customer. We treat you. I mean, I do it internally because I have Lydia. I mean, I have her on the phone at least a whole week of every month period. She's on the phone talking to customers. That's all she does. And it's so important because the touches are important. And it's just who you want to be. You want to keep your business. You want to maintain your business. You want to grow your business. You want your people to feel that they're acknowledged. Got to do that. And there are many ways of doing it, but we need, as Joellen said, I agree, we need new training on it. I think so many associates over the last 10 years, since we got rid of masters, people aren't trained on how to serve their associate base. They're not trained in it. They go out there and they think the whole business is about signing up people and it becomes all about money. Well, if that's your culture, you're going to lose because that is not what life is about. And so we got to, it's not that you can't get involved in Manatech and want to make money, but it can't be all about money. Money should be a side effect of having a wonderful culture and serving people.
Yeah, Mary Jo?
Yep.
Mary Jo?
Yep.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Rudy.
Okay. Manatech's plans is still to do training on the nonprofit, aren't they, at ManaQuest?
That's what I believe. Oh, absolutely. How to approach nonprofits, right. Right, right, right.
Okay.
Uh-huh. That's
right,
still
right.
on the agenda. Uh-huh.
Mary Jo?
Mary Jo?
Yep.
Another thing that I'm looking at, for me personally, and I think as customers within Manatech, is that we partner with other social entrepreneur companies, and that we support one another that way. We're all out to make a difference, whether it's with nutrition or, like I sent you a link yesterday about a company that does glasses online, and they, for everybody that buys a pair of glasses, they send a pair to Nicaragua, or, you know, they have a group of doctors that goes and works, you know, in the third world countries for people who need glasses. So that, I'm just saying this is an opportunity for us as social entrepreneurs to reach out and support one another.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, great. And it's great to get a group like that, you know what I mean? And there are plenty of them. We're not isolated today. This is a big movement going on in our country. Mm-hmm.
Huge.
Yep.
Mary Jo?
Yeah.
Hi, Mary Jo. It's Bob.
Hey, Bob.
I just wanted to, since you have a chance to talk to corporate sometimes, I'll put another nick in their ear.
Okay.
And that is that when we deal with things of customer service and customer service awareness, that the customer is always either perceiving the value or not.
Right.
And the reality is nobody quite knows what Ambritos is worth. Nobody quite knows what Vitamatrix is worth. But everybody absolutely positively knows what shipping is worth.
Right.
So we are nicking people on shipping the whole price structure of something they don't know the value of anyway.
Right, absolutely.
So, you know, my complaint to customer service has always been every time I dealt with Manatech over the years and many of my customers, you always felt at the end of the conversation you were just a little bit irritated. You
right.
didn't quite get good value. You always got a little bit nicked in the process. And it never really made sense because we have this thing of great value.
Right.
We should have a way to create a great perception of that value to the people
uh-huh.
that are receiving it.
Yeah, well, I think what you're saying, Bob, is we tend to diminish the value of what we have because of how we treat the little things. We let the little things eat away at this monstrous valuable Ambritos, right? Is that what you're
saying?
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. And if I buy something from Life Extension, it ends up coming in second day UPS, and if I buy over $50 worth of product, the shipping is free.
Yeah, right.
Which gives me the idea, the concept, that I perceive there's a value in their product because they shipped it to me in a valuable way.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Whenever I receive things parcel post, even the mailman grunts at having to deliver parcel post because he considers it to be junk mail.
Yeah.
He said, now, you're getting your product, but you're getting them junk mail, which has a perceived value added. And I know what little we pay for shipping because I used to do corporate shipping. I know what kind of a discount they get. The bottom line is that we're not valuing the perception of the customer.
Yeah, no, that's great, Bob. I'll transfer that information. I know that's big. We've been kind of fighting down that path for a lot of years, but I think now is never better time than now to talk about hey.
The final thing was that I use a four-question presentation just to
uh-huh.
get people started, and I would like to have, again, if you can underline it, maybe it can get to the end. But, again, the idea of saying that we need a way, an entry-level way of people to become just a customer. And I don't mean that in any kind of pejorative way. I mean just a customer as being a golden new customer who has a chance
right.
to experience the value of our product. So if we're trying to convert 3-5% or 7% of the number of people who are using multivitamin, then we could ask a simple four-question process. Number one, I have to ask three people a question today. Would you mind being one of my three? Number two, do you take a multivitamin? If yes, then would you consider changing your brand if it resulted in saving the life of a child, et cetera? And then finally, going to just simply the gift for real.
Uh-huh.
So that's my idea, just an idea, and I've given it to Sam. I've given it to a lot of people, and we'll see whether or not that. But the idea is that that would end with a click here to help and a free shipping to buy a product on automatic order.
Yeah.
And
they would just sign an application form and give their Social Security number.
No, just to become a member or even a retail associate, a retail customer.
Right, right.
It's just some way to have a click here, buy the product, shipping is free, satisfaction guarantee, you know, that type of an idea. And then we can convert them through customer follow-up.
Right.
And I've brought people from that point where they're buying the 159 pack and they're thrilled. They started by saying, wow, that multivitamin really mattered.
Mm-hmm.
I could feel the difference. That
then that leads into looking beyond that to the other products that we have. Exactly.
Correct. Then all of a sudden they changed the thing. It's, wow, that's amazing. What else do you have?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is exactly, that is the way I want to talk to somebody, with that question being from them, not from me.
Right.
So
right.
For what that's worth, Mary Jo, I really appreciate your call.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a great book. Trust me, I really love it, and I'm totally convicted about, you know, what they had to say about, you know, who we are and what we need to be and the culture that we need to develop to get back to, you know, the core principle of who we are. And I think when we get that unity back and we get that driven in a huge way internally at corporate, that we start impacting the field, and we'll get this thing back on track. You'll see that stock skyrocket, but we've got
to. I think the other way is we need to be the core to bring the corporate along.
Right.
Just let the associate base create the theme, and the corporate has to hurry up to catch up to them.
Catch up, yeah, right. But I'm here. I'm so close to them. I can pound on them at the same time. After I got done reading the book, I was like, Lydia, what if I went over to Manatech and said, hey, for no cost at all, I want to become the WOW ambassador and just live in corporate for the next 6 months and see what they say. You know what I mean? Don't pay me a dime. Just let me be the WOW ambassador, and I'll help incorporate this in this company in the next 6 months, right?
Maybe you want to start by hitting them over the head with the book.
Yeah, right. There you go. Okay, thanks. All right, guys, I got to run. I love you all. Have a great week, and have a great July 4th weekend, and we'll talk in 2 weeks. Okay, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.